Time for another local hero spotlight with Jennifer Corr from CESA, the local hero folks, community involved in sustaining agriculture. And what's your name?
I'm Aspen Buck. We are here at Flora Farm in Williamsburg, Massachusetts, and it is my micro flower farm. It's about a quarter of an acre, about, and this is the beginning of season six.
Beginning of season six.
Wow.
All right, wow.
That's a lot.
So we originally leased land further up in Williamsburg for the first 2 years. And actually for the first 2 years of the farm, we were a diversified veggie and flower farm, farming on a lot more land. I had two business partners when I started out. After one season, they left the business. And I tried to grow veggies and flowers alone for a season. And I very quickly learned that that is not a sustainable business model for one person, especially when you are working another day job, which many young farmers do. So I transitioned to just flowers because I realized as much as I love growing veggies, there's a really high density of veggie growers in the valley already.
Yeah.
And to be completely honest, I wanted to do something that was full of joy. I often talk about like what it means to be a queer femme in growing space. And oftentimes people are like, oh, flowers, that's so beautiful. That must be so nice. And I'm like, sure, it's idyllic. It's also me crawling around in the mud most of the time, and then a little bit of being idyllic.
It's still farming.
People love to be like, oh, it's just flowers.
Yeah, no.
Arranging is its own thing.
It's its own thing, but that's once you've got the flowers cut. And two, like, even gardening involves you getting dirty and in the dirt with your hands and body. So.
Right. And I think so often flowers are associated with this concept of, like, femininity and softness and all these different things. And in some ways they are, and I think that growing flowers has been a really big reclamation of learning to love elements of my femininity. There is something to be said about how young women and femmes and queer people are taught to hate women and femininity. And when you can learn to love a thing that is so deeply associated with that and yet make your own meaning out of it, I think it can be incredibly healing. And that has been part of my process. I identify as a non-binary femme and,
it's okay to love flowers.
It's okay to love flowers.
No matter
flowers.
Who you are.
Exactly. flowers are awesome.
But even my wife, who loves growing flowers at home, like the dude who's the mayor of our neighborhood who grows vegetables, he's like, why are you wasting your time growing all these flowers?
Right.
But she's like, I love these flowers. They just make her happy.
Well, yeah. And also, like, do you want pollinators making your vegetables happen? You need flowers for that.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I often say, and on the front page of my website, it's like, you know, this is a pleasure practice, and it's a practice around being connected with the flows of the season. And even right now, as you look across the field, it's like there isn't a ton, but we have the perennials coming up, we have tulips coming up. Flowers are very, very seasonal. Even the tulips, I grow a wide variety of them. Almost every day, there's a new variety opening for 4 weeks. It's a beautiful way to track your relationship to seasonality, and I think it's something we should be talking about as settlers on this land. We are not the original people who lived here, and I think that it's really valuable to form relationships of seasonality and intentionality with the places that we call home now.
That's Aspen Bai from Flora Farm here in Williamsburg on the Williamsburg-Haydenville line, sort of right near Bread Euphoria, and Jennifer Corr from CESA, the local hero folks.
Who's often at Bread Euphoria.
Yeah. I just got a cup of coffee before I met you here. Maybe get another one on the way back.
I'm curious about your markets. So, like, your tulips are up right now. Where are those going?
I do a Mother's Day fundraiser most years. The tulips specifically are a bit of a heritage project for me. My maternal grandmother was Dutch, and she lived through the World War II occupation of the Netherlands. She wasn't Jewish, but she did a lot of, like, supporting her local community and smuggling of food and whatnot. And tulip bulbs are mildly toxic, but during the cold winter, the worst winter of the war, they were eating tulip bulbs. Because it was all
I was hoping you were going to say they were slipping them to the Nazis.
Unfortunately, no, but there is stories of her, like, smuggling food, being stopped on her bike, and she would wear this big raincoat, and they would stuff her stomach, because they would check the saddlebags on the bikes, but they wouldn't pat you down if you looked pregnant. And so she was able to smuggle food, including tulip bulbs, back to her town, and her family, and the people that she was supporting. And so I've always kind of viewed the tulips as a bit of a thing that is related to some sort of resistance. And so for me, I grow them, and this year I'm doing a 60-40 fundraiser, and the money that I'm raising is going to a friend's farming project in Gaza. I connected with a young strawberry farmer there several years ago. He's since been martyred. But his friends and family have continued on his legacy work, working to reestablish farms and olive groves there in North Gaza. So the money from the tulips supports that project.
Wow. I mean, Mother's Day itself has this original, at least in this country, meaning of peace and trying to end war. And it's amazing the story that your maternal grandmother comes from, and now that you're carrying that on in a way to try to use farming to show peace in Gaza right now is really inspirational.
Thank you. I really try to use this business as a voice for the things I care about. As a small business, oftentimes your politics become your brand.
You're using your two lips to speak peace.
No, gross. Oh, my.
Not bad,
you also have peonies. And what are these bushes near the deer fence, which I'm also going to ask questions about?
The red one is a nine bark. It's actually a native shrub. They're beautiful. They're really lovely for greenery additions inside of arrangements. I don't have a ton of space to grow shrubs and greenery, so I rely on other local flower farmers and buy in from them oftentimes when I need that for my arrangements. Partner with other local CISA HERA members like Tip Top Orchard up in Buckland and Old Friends Farm over in Amherst. The other one is a hydrangea.
Oh.
And then the peonies and the hellebore, which is also sometimes called winter rose, which is the little purple flower you can see that's blooming on the left. Both of those were things that I also inherited from my grandmother when she passed away. 2 years ago, I lost both of my grandmothers in a very short span of time, and they were both flower appreciators and growers and whatnot. And so spring is always kind of a time of intentionality around honoring their lineage.
And these plants come from their gardens.
Yes.
Amazing. And you do events as well.
I do.
Right? So I'm thinking about your mix, like how you choose your what you're growing here and for what seasons and what kinds of events, weddings.
Totally, yeah. So I do weddings and special events and special deliveries. That's a big market area for me. Specifically, I tend to mostly serve queer couples, and I'm currently booking 26 and 27. It's a bit of a challenge because I have limited space. I'm very intentional about colors.
Frankly, the arrangements are stunning.
So will the couple say, hey, this is what I would like for my wedding. Can you grow this? And then you go grow specifically that and you have it ready for their wedding?
Not totally, because...
So you're not like a wedding DJ where you're like, here are the songs that are going to be played at my wedding.
Not entirely, although sometimes...
A year in advance. Yeah.
Sometimes, yes. If you book me a year in advance, I might be able to be like, you're having a purple wedding.
Yeah.
I'm going to intentionally plan to grow more purple in my seed plan this year because I know I'm going to need it. And if I grow it, I don't have to buy it from someone else in the local area, which I love to support other local flower farms. That's my whole model, is that I use like pretty much 100% locally grown flowers for my weddings and events.
But you're just not growing 100% of them.
I'm not growing 100% of them. And so there's a network of us local flower growers here in the Valley who work together to support each other in
that
way.
That's amazing. That's fun.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I love that. And it's not always like that in floristry specifically. It is a very women-dominated career field. And as a result, people really protect their brand and their customers and their pricing and whatnot. And what I appreciate about living around here is a lot of us aren't like that. And we're really down to support each other and help each other out.
So Aspen is going to harvest some of these tulips.
Oh, there's your peony looking one. That's super cool. I was wondering if it had feathered edges.
Yeah. So you said that there's a trick to harvesting tulips. What is it?
Yes. So when you are growing tulips industrially, you do not cut them at ground level. You actually pull the whole bulb up and out of the ground, so you get that extra several inches of stem that is coming from the bulb underground, right at the base.
It feels like you're doing something wrong. Like you pulled it all the way out of the bulb. No, you broke it.
I know, it's so sad. And then I have this plant that has a bulb still attached, but what is unique and nice about that then is the bulb is holding a lot of kind of life, and you can take this and put it in a refrigerator and store it with the bulb on for months.
Yes. Like the placenta of the tulip, you just kept it connected out of the womb.
Yes, exactly. Kind of, literally. You can then come to florists in June in the area and say, hey, I have tulips.
because you just cut them off at the last second, cut the umbilical cord. There you go. There's your
rehydrate it in some water and sell it to them.
I raised my second child that same exact way. We kept him in a cooler with the placenta attached for like 3 months.
Is it why Enzo is the coolest of your children?
It is.
I am really strategic in my, you should see my spreadsheet for field planning. It's ridiculous. Most farmers would just be like, oh yeah, I'm going to grow, you know, these three different types of bachelor button. And mine is like color coded because I have to be like, okay, I am growing purple for each week of the year. And I'm also growing red, and it's sort of paced out like that so that I always have a diversity of blooms so that at any point, if I were to be booked for a wedding that had a specific color scheme, I would at least be able to use some of my flowers.
As a queer farmer, it is good to focus on the rainbow that way, I think.
Since you have a spreadsheet of that nature, how many species are you growing each season?
Gosh, anywhere between like 12 to 20, maybe.
That's a good variety. And it's mostly sold as arrangements, not as like cuttings. Can you talk about the difference and like why that's important too?
Right. Yeah. So I do a little bit of wholesale, mostly to other local flower shops in the area. But for the most part, yeah, stuff goes into arrangements. In past years, I've done CSAs. This year, I'm transitioning away from that model, mostly just because I think in this economy, flowers are a luxury service. I think that the average person doesn't have the budget to be doing that, or if you are someone who's supporting local agriculture already, you're likely getting your CSA, your veggie CSA, from a farm that has a pick your own flower field. And we have a luxury here in Western Mass that is a common thing. Mm-hmm. Then this year, for the first year, I'll also be running a farm stand.
Where's that going to be? We all want to know.
We're like,
we
want to
go now.
You sound like the Beastie Boys coming in together like
where
that.
Where's the farm stand? You got
to me. I'm a rap on fire. So the farm stand will be on Fruit Street in Northampton.
Shouldn't it be Flower Street?
It would make sense. Uh-huh. But we do like to joke in our house. We're all queers who live there, and so we call ourselves the Fruities. And we'll have a little... I bought it off Facebook Marketplace. I'm pretty sure it's an old restock book from a booking stand from a library. So it'll be just a little cart in my front yard, and you'll be able to get arrangements both wrapped and in jars.
Do you prefer the growing of the plants or the arranging? Because those are two different skill sets.
Gosh, hard question. There are things I love about both. You know, I think once the seed of growing is planted, it never dies. I grew up on a homestead. And my mother was a gardener, basically a farmer. I mean, I would say that the growing space she had was bigger than this, and it was our home garden. It's hard to run a farm and a floristry business in two alone. And I often have days where I go, am I doing too many things? Should I choose one side? And then I think about what side I would want to choose, and I can't. I love both for very different reasons. The farm is an embodiment thing. It gets me outside. I oftentimes am here immersed in the sounds of nature, and I'm like listening to the morning dove coo, and I'm listening to the wind in the trees, and it's just like, oh, I feel so, I'm like, oh, I'm right where I need to be in my life. And then floristry is this artistic practice, which out of all the arts, it's not like painting or sculpting where you are the master and you are controlling it, because it is a plant and it is alive. And so, yeah, sure, I can choose where I place a flower in an arrangement, but flowers are going to move through that arrangement. They're going to dance in the wind. Their stems are going to get longer as they're in the vase for some varieties. And so it's this thing that you can't really control. And it's also really ephemeral. And there's this relationship to, I'm making this, and at some point it's going to die, which is really beautiful. And I get to be a part of that. And then I get to be a part of that in other people's lives at really meaningful times in their lives. I get to be part of people's love and grief stories in a way that is really meaningful to me.
Let's talk about your fence here. because
enough about grief and love. Onto the fence.
Well, I mean, like, may honestly involve grief because, like, this is in the wild of Haydenville. You're in concert with the wildlife that is here. This is a large fence. what are the deer eating? Which flowers did you have to protect from the deer?
Totally. So a lot of perennials, which are everything that's planted on the edge, which I have done strategically, are oftentimes deer resistant. Deer won't really eat hellebore, daffodils, stuff like that. However, they will eat tulips. And many of the annuals too. I mean, deer are, they're opportunistics.
We hear about deer fences with produce all of the time, but not necessarily with flowers and how that might be necessary.
Yeah, on my scale, losing anything would make a big impact. And so I was like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I'm too small to be like, oh no, the deer ate half my zinnias. Now I have no zinnias.
Do you do dried flowers at all? It's making me think of preservation.
Yes, I do dried flowers. So many of my flowers are things that I also, as I'm crop planning, I'm planning for things that will also dry well. Because I do the 100% local, nothing grows here in New England in the winter. One of my winter offerings is what we call everlasting wreaths or arrangements, which are dried flowers. And I had an all dried flower wedding last November and it was beautiful and I got to work on it all season long. With the first flower that was blooming in spring, I started holding back some of my crop to dry it so that when this couple out in Boston got married in November, I would have flowers for their chuppah and for their two bridal bouquets. Yeah, it was beautiful.
What is your favorite flower to work with?
Everyone loves to ask me that question. And I always like to tell them I have a favorite flower for every month, because how could you choose one? My favorite flower for May is the tulip, specifically either the Black Hero tulip, which is a multi-petaled peony-style tulip that opens almost dark blacky purple. You can see them starting to bud up there. Mm-hmm. I just love the name. I think that's really cool and beautiful. And
Tulip T'Challa.
I heard T'Challa say Wakanda forever, quietly. Like he knew that it was the last time.
You know, I didn't think about that, but Gosh, and June, probably the peony. She's just so, you're like, yeah, I love peonies. Yeah,
so
peonies.
Pretty.
They're so pretty and ruffly and perfect. And the ones I grow are this beautiful light pink with a creamy center. And it's just, they're, like, texturally, they're so good. I'm always like, you know, you're not supposed to touch the head of a flower. It damages it a lot. But at least once a year, I'm like, I gotta pet the peonies.
And they smell great.
Yes, exactly. Which actually, a lot of people are always like, oh, flowers, that must be so, they must smell so nice. And a lot of flowers actually don't have a scent. I mean, they smell like plants, you know, but they're not sweet or aromatic in the way that a peony is or yarrow is. The ones that do smell good are oftentimes some of my favorites. It's another element of that being immersed in the experience.
Is there any variety that broke your heart and you weren't able, like you tried growing it and it just wouldn't come up for you and you just had to let that dream go?
Not entirely, but sort of. Lysianthus is incredibly hard to germinate. If you are another flower person listening to this, you know what I'm talking about. And so I actually partner with Harvest Farm in Waitley, and they do my Lysianthus starts for me because they have a much more high-tech greenhouse, women who have been trained. This is their whole thing, is they're the Lizzie people, you know, and that's what they do. God bless Beth. She started my Lysianthus starts, which is actually one of the only annuals that I have planted so far. They sort of look a little bit like an imitation rose.
Where is your greenhouse?
I currently rent greenhouse space each spring from Hampshire College.
From where?
Oh, boy.
What's that now?
So I'm an alum of Hampshire College.
Oh.
Half my degree is in permaculture. I took a bunch of classes at the Stockbridge School of Ag. And Hampshire is now closing, and this will be potentially my final spring of having that access to greenhouse space. And so at some point this year, I will have to be thinking about what next spring looks like for me. I mean, I am not one of the owners of the land here, and I think that's like a barrier for so many young farmers. We don't own our land, and so you want to go start infrastructure, and what do you do when you're on a piece of land that has a 5-year lease and you're putting up a greenhouse that's going to last 35 years or longer? You know,
doing a project on this right now, trying to look at this a little bit more. Yeah.
Right. Because how do we do that? And I mean, I think a lot about, you know, as young farmers, it costs so much money to get into this industry. I think that the concept of like community farms and even just community based infrastructure is really, really cool. not everyone should have to be applying for a MADR grant for a greenhouse if you're not going to use the whole thing. Okay, you pay a small fee and you get to have your 12 by 12 table in a community greenhouse. You sign up for your 2 watering shifts a week and you all manage and support the greenhouse together. And then you get to have community, because farming as an industry, especially if you're doing it alone, can be very isolating. I spend a lot of time alone. I don't hate it. I love to have alone time. And also, I think that there is such a joy in farming collectively and partnering with other farmers to also be like, okay, we're not going to do the 2 same exact thing, because then we're stepping on each other's toes. And how instead can we work together to create a regional network of people who are all specializing in different things and supporting each other's visions in different ways that, yeah, I don't know, I think in a lot of ways is already happening here. We are this agricultural hub, which is so cool.